And hello again and welcome back. For some criminals who are sent to prison, their toughest days may not be behind bars, but rather when they are released. The transition back into society can be very difficult. That's where Project COPE comes in. Project COPE is an organization using faith-based teams to help ex-offenders re-enter society. Joining me in studio to talk about the program, how it works, and why it's needed is Adrian Denson, Executive Director of Project COPE. Also with us is Wayne Coleman, the President of Project COPE. Thank you both so much for being with us. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Adrian, let me begin with you. You specifically select ex-offenders to become part of your program. What is that selection process like? How do you select them?
Okay. Well, the things that we look at can be strange to other people. Our ideal partner tends to have spent a long time in prison for a violent crime. They tend to have limited financial means, limited familial relations. So they're basically desperate in need of a place to call home and desperate in need of a community to call family. We also speak to the people at the prison and get a reference from them. We try to see if they've been making good use of their time in prison. Did they take advantage of the programs that are there? You know, were they staying out of trouble? Do they have good behavioral conduct? So we try to get a holistic picture of who they are and their dreams of their future.
It sounds like you really want to be sure that once you take them on, that they're going to be successful candidates and reenter society successfully.
That is correct. We want people that have a desire to make a change and to build the life of their dreams.
And Wayne, what about your role in all of this as president of Project COPE? Tell me how the process works once you have found the candidates that you're going to work with. What then?
Well, I'm lucky that I'm not only the president of Project COPE, but I'm also a team member. So as a team member of the actual ICD COPE team, we follow the advice of the director, Adrian, as to which candidates are available to us. And once we determine which ones are available that really want to make changes in their lives, then as a team, we go out and take a look at the candidates. We interview them ourselves and make sure that they will actually fit with the team's need. Now, fortunately, as being president, I can also sort of help each team pick a candidate that matches them.
And how are these teams comprised? I know it's faith-based, but just tell me what that part of it is all about.
Well, it is faith-based, but it's usually members of a congregation that will come together that see the need for their community. This is not only about the ex-offenders that we look after and take care of. It's also about making the community safer. And frankly, as a faith-based community, we're also in the miracle business. So once we see the miracles that change in their lives, it also changes the lives of the congregation members as well, the team members.
Adrian, do you seek out people or do they seek you out? I mean, if I'm an offender in a penitentiary, do I come to you and ask me if you will help me, or do you seek them?
Usually they seek us out. They've heard about us over the years. We've been around for 27 years, so it's mostly word of mouth. We get about 400 people that are seeking our support over the course of any year. And we can only work with about 31 people or so. So we're working with a small number of a great need. But they'll write to us and express interest in our program. If they have at least 8 months, upwards to 2 years prior to their release from prison, then we will send them an application. It's pretty long that they fill out. If it looks like they're going to be a good candidate for our program, then I'll go to the prison. Our case manager, Ashley Velez, will go to the prison and we interview the person there and see if they'll be a good fit for our program. If they are accepted into our program, then they're paired with a congregational team that agrees to work with them, walk with them, support them over the course of a year. And so we are so excited that the teams are willing to come on board. Sometimes they like to go to the prison and interview someone there, see if they're a good fit, to build camaraderie, to build trust with their partner before they come home from prison.
How successful is the program in terms of people that you're helping who do not recommit some crime and go back to prison?
Our recidivism rate is less than 14%. So for the most part, our partners are coming out and they're building the lives of their dreams and they're doing well.
14%. Wayne, that's small in one context, but rather large in another.
Well, when you think about it in comparison to the most, it's like 60 to 70% The ones that get out of prison go back to prison. So we pretty much reverse that. She says 14. I usually say 10. So.
Well, which is it?
It's between those two.
Definitely. So.
Are you looking for volunteers as well to become part of your operation?
We're always looking for volunteers. We're looking for congregations who just want to make a difference in the world, want to help reduce recidivism, want to have an impact on the community, people who want to practice hospitality, to love their neighbor, and to really put their faith into action. Our teams tend to be made up of at least 4 to 5 people from local congregations. Some of the teams are upward to 15, you know, a lot of people who are interested in making a difference in the community. So we're always looking for new team members. There's always work to be done in our office, and so we welcome anybody who just wants to lend a helping hand to be a part of our program as well.
Wayne, how do you recruit?
Well, we recruit by not only word of mouth, but also by different programs. Like we have a gala this weekend that we've invited a lot of people to come to. We have things like golf tournaments that we have every year. And again, by also going to community organizations like Rotary Clubs and different ones to talk about what we do. And the more that the word gets out, then the better off we are. We also have our ex-offenders, our partners, that go out and recruit for us as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a big network that they have and that they share the word about us.
What specifically do the volunteers do? I mean, as part of these teams, they go out as teams. Just walk me through that as to specifically what team members would be doing.
Well, I sort of have a list here. I'm not going to read the whole list, but if you can see, we actually look after the partners' needs of employment, transportation, training, housing, all the things that you could think that you would need when you're to be successful. One of the main things that we give, though, is friendship and encouragement when they get out.
What, Adrian, what is life like for someone who, an offender who is, or ex-offender who is not associated with you, when he or she walks out of that jail or prison? What are they confronted with initially that is problematic for them?
A lot of times one of the first things they're confronted with is fear. Many are afraid that they won't have a place to lay their head, that they won't have food to put on the table, that they won't be able to find a job. It's hard enough to find a job with a master's degree in this country right now, much less with a murder conviction. You know, many are afraid that they're going to fall back upon the poor choices that led them to prison in the first place, and many people do return. So I think big struggles that people face are housing, safe, stable housing. People struggle with maybe addictions that they might have had prior to prison. It might be substance abuse, but it might be criminal thinking. You know, people struggle with finding a job, having an employer that's willing to take a chance on them. And when they do, they often find that they make ideal employees because they're just so happy to have a job.
Is there a psychological component to the work that you do with these folks?
Sometimes we do work with people that have mental health issues, and we try to hook them up with community resources so that they can meet their emotional needs.
What is the most common type of crime that you're dealing with these ex-offenders?
We tend to work with people with violent crimes. So sometimes it's there's robbery, there's assault, there's murder. So we work with people that had a violent past, and that's what it is their past. And when they come out, they're looking forward to a bright future.
What about the breakdown, Wayne, with regard to male-female?
Well, I can't really say what the breakdown is. I guess Adrian would know that. But we take both male and female out of at the ICD team. We had 3 male members that came through, and now we have 3 female members that have come through. So
we mostly work with men. We have single occupancy apartments that we provide in Marcus, and sometimes the women might want to reconnect with their children or their family when they come home, and we're not able to do that at our Marcus housing. And so it tends to be a lot of men that we work with.
I want to open up the phone lines to folks who might want to get into the conversation, have questions about Project COPE and the work that you're doing. 382-8255 is the number. We'd love to hear from you. That's 382-TALK, if that helps you remember it. We also will take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on air or reach us through Facebook as well. many of these people, when they come out, I'm sure come out, and they have families out there somewhere. What about, and I'll start with you on this, Wayne, what about working with the families, some of whom I suppose are anxious and eager to have their relative back to them, others maybe not so much?
Yeah, it really works both ways. Sometimes they cut those ties and they really don't have family connections. And part of our job is that we try to encourage that so that they can reestablish those connections. We've had one partner, as an example, he and his mother hadn't talked for many, many years. When he first got out, he went to see her. She wouldn't see him. Now he's reunited with her. They spend holidays together. He's married, has two children. She's become a grandmother, and that relationship's been reestablished.
Would that count as one of your best success stories, or do you have others perhaps that you could relate as to how successful this transition has been? Adrian?
It's one of many success stories, mm-hmm. and sometimes it's in the little things, someone finding a job, keeping a job, starting a family, going back to school. We have so many stories. Everyone has a story.
What about follow-up? How long are you working with these men and women, and at what point do you just kind of cut the tie and let them do their thing?
Well, we tend not to cut the tie. We like to have the relationship be a lifelong experience. I know one of our partners came to a graduation, and he looked at his team member and said, you know, this is Bob, my lifelong friend. So we try to maintain relations as long as our partners will allow us to. Our program is over the course of a year, so our teams and staff work very closely with our partners over a year's time. At the end of the year, we have a great big potluck and graduation ceremony, and all the teams get together. They bring their favorite dish, and we hear the stories of the trials and the tribulations, the mm-hmm. triumphs and the joys that they've encountered over the years.
Wayne, you talked earlier about recruiting and your role in that and working with the teams. Do you have difficulty? Do you go to a church and approach the entire congregation with becoming involved, or is it on an individual basis?
Well, we do both, but we love to approach the whole congregation, but quite often we're invited to like a festival of ministries where we can be one of many tables there to say what we're doing and whether or not they would like to join us.
Oftentimes the teams are based on relationships. Someone might have seen their friend work with someone and saw that friend's life transformed by working with someone who's coming out of prison. And so they want to be involved. And so they talk to friends of theirs and members of their church community or their faith community. And next thing you know, we have four or five people from a congregation that's interested in working with our organization.
One of the things that you do is also assist in training for employment. How does that work? I mean, where does this training come from? Again, are there team members who have certain skills and they work with the offenders? Is that the way it goes?
It is. We have team members that might help with the interview process, maybe give them a mock interview, help them to fill out an application. Sometimes our team members will provide job leads and take their partner out there, sit there during the interview, sit outside and waiting for them to come out. So the teams are very much helpful in helping our partners find jobs. As a staff, we're always looking for job listings. We're always calling companies, trying to build relationships with them to help our partners become employed. Because once they do become employed, then everything changes for them.
I think it's fair to assume, Wayne, that prospective employers might be a little bit concerned about bringing in someone who perhaps has a violent past or certainly a criminal past. How do you convince them that this is the right thing to do?
Well, we also partner with other organizations that help us with the training and interviewing potential partners, potential employers. But we also, one of the best things that we have is the success stories of the ones that do get employed. They become the best employees for their employers.
And oftentimes it's their word of mouth, and they become our best job developers.
Exactly.
So if they do really well on the job, then they might say, oh, I know someone that's looking for a job who has these job skills. Will you hire them as well?
How would you explain the fact that they could become and often do become the best employee that the employers have?
I'd say second chance. They really understand it. This is their chance to get out from under what they've been living under for the last 15, 20, sometimes 30 years, and they take advantage of it.
They're so appreciative to have a job, and so they tend to be very loyal employees. You know, they're happy to have a job, and they want to stay there as long as possible.
You know, if you talk about someone who's been away for 30 years and coming out into today's society, That transition has got to be difficult in very basic ways. For instance, never having operated a cell phone, for instance, or a computer and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Where do you come in with regard to transitioning them into the modern world, if you will?
It's a patient process that they go through. A lot of times when they come home, they go to the gas station looking for a payphone. Well, you're hard-pressed to find a payphone these days. So I'm just helping them to work their cell phone, how to leave a message on it, how to check a message that's been left on it, even answering it. Sometimes it's just a high-tech pager because they don't know even how to answer a phone. Sometimes when they come home, they're shocked by how people are dressing today. I know one of the people was on a train, and he was shocked at how provocatively women dress these days. Things like bottled water is all brand new for people. When they're coming out of prison, they come home with an ATM card with any money that's left on their account, and they have no idea how to access that money. Things like setting up a bank account. The team members work very, very closely with the partner just to help them through the things that we just take for granted.
Boy, that's where the teams really become involved and become important, because they sit by them side by side and lead them through each of these steps.
I would hesitate to wonder how I would or any of us would handle a situation like that coming cold into a society that you've been away from for 30 years. Let's take a call. We have Richard who wants to join us. Richard, go ahead. You're on the air.
I'm an attorney, and I just really is more of a comment than anything than a question. But, you know, we do a great job on the middle part of the criminal story in our country and in Missouri. You know, you've got the prevention phase, which we do a kind of not a very good job at. We do a great job at prosecuting and punishment, and we have not done a very good job on remediation after these people come out. And I want to comment that I think you folks are doing great work, and I thank God that that people coming out of the system have got somewhere to go to try to reintegrate into society, because traditionally we haven't worried too much about the head and tail of the dog. We worried about putting people in jail and punishing them.
All right. Would either of you like to respond to that?
Well, first of all, thank you for your comments. It's very encouraging to us. And as I said earlier, one of the benefits of doing this work is that we do see miracles happen, and we see lives change, and we see communities get safer because of this as well. So thank you for your encouragement and support.
It's a pleasure to do it. You know, we've been doing this work for 27 years, and we learn as much from our partners as they teach us.
And this work that we're talking about is the work of rehabilitating, if you will, or helping ex-offenders integrate their way back into society. My guests in studio are Adrian Denson, Executive Director of Project COPE, which does all of that, and Wayne Coleman, who is the president of that same organization. One of the things that that you'd mentioned that is done is the transitional housing. Where does this housing come from? I talked with a previous guest about, you know, housing just doesn't materialize most of the time. Do you have volunteers who house these folks, or are they on their own in the homes? What's going on there?
In 1991, we began leasing housing so that our partners would have a place to stay and we could be more holistic in our programming. By 1994, we had purchased two apartment buildings in St. Louis City, and by 2000, we had purchased a third building in St. Louis City. In addition, we have housing in St. Charles County. We have a house, and we have up to three people stay in that house there. So slowly, you know, unit by unit, we've increased our housing stock, and we're looking forward to even doubling our stock in the years to come.
And Wayne, how do residents of these neighborhoods react to having this population in their midst?
Quite well. The partners that we have really take care of the housing. They become good neighbors, good citizens, which is all part of the reentry process.
The event that you're having this weekend, tell us about that. It's a dinner on the 23rd. Everything's happening on the 23rd, apparently.
I think so.
And Mike Wolf, a former justice of the Missouri Supreme Court, is going to be your speaker. What is happening there? You're honoring certain of your people?
That's correct. So on the 23rd, we're having a big gala to celebrate our 27 years and also to celebrate second chances. And so, like you said, Michael Wolf will be our keynote speaker. He's going to be talking on saving lives, saving talents, community help for ex-offenders. Julius Hunter is going to be our MC. He's the former.
You're in trouble now.
I know. We're excited that he's going to be on board. And we're honoring partners who have done well and have a success story. We're looking forward to celebrating them. We're celebrating even our PO. We have a PO that works just with Project COPE, and so she's done such a fabulous job, so we're celebrating her as well. We're celebrating some of our teams, Ladue Chapel, Presbyterian Church, Green Trails, United Methodist Church. We're honoring them for their commitment to our organization and working with us over the course of the years.
And one final question. How are you funded? Where does the money come from to do what you do?
We're diversified, so we're grateful for that. We have individual donors that have been giving to us over the years, monthly donors. We have congregations that come on board and commit to giving us money throughout the year, and we also have local foundations that support our mission and our work.
It sounds like it could be expensive.
Oh, it's very expensive. The need is so great, and so we're always looking for people who are willing to support our organization, who are willing to come on board and become mentors and team members for our partners and people that are just willing to help.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both, Adrienne and Wayne, for being with us and telling us about Project COPE. Great success for you. I hope you have it on Sunday when you have your gala. Give Julius my best. We're old buddies.
Okay.
But, yes, I hope you have a wonderful evening. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us. It's great talking
to you. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk with St. Louis Symphony Music Director David Robertson and with U-City native Rod Milam about his project to find and report on musicians with roots to University City. Also, Mike Schrand will have a conversation with singer-songwriter Nick Lowe. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at progress in the prevention of Alzheimer's disease. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr and Ariana Tobin. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.